Okay, let's get going for more misery. Well, let's work through this together, because I really had to bust my head on this, and your input is certainly as relevant as mine. I'll try to tell you what I make of it, and see if we can find our way together. I feel safe about what we've said so far. I have received your sprout, you who are to come. So that's the idea, you might say. If we make this simple, the spirit of the depths is the unconscious, and the ego is you. So here it's, I have received your sprout, you who are to come. That's the unconscious talking to the ego.
See, I thought it was the unconscious talking to the possibility of who Jung was supposed to be.
Yeah, or saying the same thing,
who
right?
Was,
yeah.
Okay.
You who are to come, again, it's dangerous language, but that Jung is a person in process.
Right.
And what the spirit of the depths is saying is, look, Jung, change the way you look at things, because you are to grow into being deep. Should we close that door?
Anne's coming back.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Just worry about it. What I say sometimes.
You don't have to worry. All the clergy just cross the street.
Oh.
What secretaries talk?
Oh, okay. That Jung is a man in process, and the spirit of the depth is saying, look, Jung, grow into being strong enough to talk about what I have to say, and that's the meaning of your crisis,
and that he's going to be growing from that place of depth, because
yes.
His sprout is down there,
right?
Very similar to in Living Symbol, that she plants, she carries the sprout down with her as well.
I thought of that too.
Mm-hmm. In Living Symbol, the woman carries the green sprout down with her as she descends.
I absolutely thought of that as well. Mm-hmm. Now here I don't know what the hell is going on. And mockery worshipped it, your child, your wondrous child, the child of one who is to come, who should announce the Father, a fruit that is older than the tree on which it grew. So your child would be young in growth, right? Child who is to come, young, growing into a person capable of communicating what he's hearing in this act of imagination. Who should announce the Father? Now that's a big question. Why the Father? A fruit that is older than the tree on which it grew.
Is that one creation then?
How can a fruit be older than the tree it grows on?
It's the fruit of the depths.
Perhaps the tree is the...
The fruit of the depths, which transcends time, that he's going to bring into life.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. Maybe the a priori, yeah. The Father?
Yeah, that's
it. It's not a capital F. Mm-hmm. The only thing I can think of is the concept of what a father does is changing. I mean, sometimes it helps to be really simple about these things. We need a new type of father to accomplish this task.
Wouldn't you also say that father is like the culture?
Yeah.
What the father gets to depend on is culture and how to be himself.
Culturally speaking, I mean, on a collective scale, you could say culture, or the father is the way things are done.
Mm-hmm.
But in a way, we're saying the same thing in different words, that the personal father and the way things are done are up for change.
You know, you can also make a very Christian metaphor out of this. If it's the child...
But I would agree with you if it was a capital F.
Well, I don't know if he followed that very carefully.
Hmm?
Would he have followed that very carefully?
Oh, yeah. Well, would he? Well, that's a good question. Because, come to think of it, all nouns are capitalized in German. So we wouldn't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe to make it more of a metaphor than to...
That's a very good point. That we really don't know whether it's a small F or a capital F, because in German all nouns are capitalized.
In the letter, the father is not a noun in this case.
Well, father grammatically would be. If you wrote Vater in German, you write capital V, A T E R.
But God is always capitalized here.
See, I think we're dealing with editorialized. This is the editors at work.
Is the tree that it's referring to? The sprout is grown up. Well, actually, and a fruit that is older than the tree on which it grew, so it has to be the father of the creation, the beginning of creation.
Your guess is as good as mine. I think I'd say, if I had to, that the tree... Remember in the dream of the frost that Jung picked fruit from a tree, that the tree would be the developmental process of the society. What was growing, what was to grow in the society's way of doing things, in the society's values, in the society's understanding of itself.
So if you read it, who should announce the fathering? A fruit that is older than the tree on which it grew.
See,
making it not a noun.
See, I thought is the child is the fruit. Mm-hmm. Who will announce this? Yes, and fathering there would fit in. Not the father, but the fathering of.
I think we got to stay with the text. He doesn't say fathering. He says, mm-hmm. I don't have the German with me, but I'm assuming they translated it accurately.
Okay.
Well, take your pick. I think I'd go with go ahead.
If the tree, in this case, perhaps, could be the spiritual attitude or development of the individual, mm-hmm. then the fruit would be that ancient thing, the self, the mm-hmm. eternal. And so it would be older than the tree that bears
mm-hmm.
it.
Then, if I put that in prosaic language, the child would be, on the one hand, who Jung is growing to be, and on the other hand, it would be the message that is being Jung is communicating. And I'd say announce the father, maybe then going with Karen, if we take it with a capital S, F, that we're getting a new God image.
Right.
That's highly ambiguous. Highly ambiguous. I mean, some of it I think is easier to understand. I think the thing I still feel confident about is that Jung's growth is affecting the collective unconscious. And that's an idea that we don't really live with. That we, that an individual can influence history. In pain you will conceive, and joyful is your birth. That's not too hard to figure out, right? That the ego, or Jung, is going through a painful process, but will come out with a new attitude. We passed by in our ridiculousness and senselessness when we caught sight of you. Kathy and I were talking about that. I think I would say we here is that the spirit of the depths is a multiplicity. It's not a single point of view. And at first, the spirit of the depths.
Could go back to the sentence just above where it says,
yep.
Here is your herald, doubt stands to your right, disappointment to your left.
Yes.
And that means we. Those.
Oh.
That makes sense.
That makes sense. Yeah, that could be. Our eyes were blinded and our knowledge fell silent when we received your radiance. Your new spark of an eternal fire into which night were you born. The unconscious is speaking that it is being influenced by his efforts. You skip a little bit.
What's the question mark for?
Well, it's into which night were you born? It's asking which night are you going through that is your birth?
Does that mean doubt or disappointment? Which night? Or am I missing things?
Well, I think you could say, you know, what sort of misery are you going through?
Right. Okay.
It's almost a rhetorical.
Okay.
It's a statement of you're miserable. Do you know what kind of misery you're going through? That's how I understand it. This is one of those cryptic passages. Probably why it was in that little box. Okay. Your voice will be heard, and I think then that continues for a while. But again, I think the thing here that's so important that is new for us, that if we work on ourselves, forget the mystical aspect of this, forget the synchronistic aspect of it, just if we work on ourselves and we discover truths about ourselves, which are also truths about our time. In other words, if in our work we're looking at our own problems as infections from the time, and we work on that and we articulate that, we publish that, speak about that, and subsequent people read it, maybe even subsequent generations read it, that's going to have an effect on the course of history. A very simple example, Jung's work has changed my life. Well, I'm one teensy, teensy, teensy piece of history. How many other impacts has his writing had on people's psyches, and the way they live differently affects the life of their community differently? That's putting it rationally. I think he means it, or it can also be taken synchronistically, but just on the rational level, I think it makes sense.
Am I reading this wrong, or does it also talk about those who would really be affected by what Jung is going to bring are people who have suffered, people who have been in that same place of doubt and fear? Am I reading it wrong?
Well, what would you cite to substantiate
this? Yes, sir, he says, your voice, the rarest pleasing sound, will be heard amid the stammering of wretches, rejects, and those condemned as worthless.
Well, yeah, then, yeah.
And what about the line before, where it says, in the hour of their disgrace and will become known to them in what they hate, fear, and abhor.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, then I agree. So all of this, remember what the state of mind Jung is in. He's feeling demoralized, lost, depressed. And all of it is, it's saying, don't let that stop you. Because what you discover here may expand beyond yourself. When you get this tough stuff, I think sometimes it helps step away and just try to put it at its most simple. I got another image here. In another box. We're going to come to fear these boxes. Your life is with he who has overcome himself and who has disowned his self-overcoming. That is a clear reference to Freddie Nietzsche, as the footnote 127 mentions.
Is that quote tied to that image?
The italics are what are in this box. And it's a flower above, and I don't know what to make of the below. It just seems like...
This is the one with the lion descending the stair.
There it is.
And with the figure of Aquarius to the right and the lion to the left.
Oh, you're right. Is that Aquarius to the right?
It seems to
yes,
be a water
is.
Bearer.
Yeah, that's Aquarius.
But I wanted to ask you if you knew what the symbols were within each pillared structure to
no.
the left and the right.
No, I don't.
I couldn't see them well enough to... At first I thought they were planetary
signs. Oh, just are they arabesques?
No, there are two symbols.
Yeah.
Well, I know what one is.
Yeah, go ahead.
This one is the sun, and that is refers to his birth sign, Leo. Because Leo is, I believe this is an astrological configuration.
Oh, he's a lion?
He's Leo the lion, and the lion, the sun rules Leo. So the sun astrologically is used to represent Leo.
Okay.
In the zodiac.
Okay.
And then on the right we have Aquarius, which is at its, if I understand this correctly, it is not exalted in Leo. So if your sun sign is Leo, then Aquarius is some sort of weak point or your lowest point or
Where does Leo come in the zodiac, do you know?
July to August.
But I mean, you've got Pisces.
After Cancer and before Virgo.
So, I don't know much about astrology. All I know is Taurus, is that right? Taurus, Pisces, no.
Taurus, Gemini.
Yeah, Gemini. Comes after Taurus.
What comes before Pisces?
Aquarius.
Okay, what comes after Pisces?
Aries,
okay. Because, and then where does, so we got Aries,
Taurus.
No, Aries, Taurus.
I'm going to write this down.
Aries, Taurus, Gemini.
Yeah.
Cancer.
Oh, Cancer, yeah.
Leo.
So we got Taurus, you said, right? Taurus,
Gemini.
Taurus is in May, Gemini is
June.
So I'm right,
Gemini.
Cancer.
No. Hang on.
Where do you want to start?
Yes. That's the problem. Okay. Pisces, I want to start.
You're going the other way.
I'm going Spring Board. Taurus, Pisces, Aquarius, right?
Oh, he's going back. He's going, yeah.
But the spring point is he moves this way.
Okay.
No, what do you mean by spring?
Where the sun is on the first day of spring. So from 0 to 2000, it was here. From 2000 to 4000, it will be here. From 2000 BC to Brother Christ in his Taurus. And he links this up with the bull cults of antiquity. This with Christianity, two fish. This with depth psychology and water carrying. So my question is, where does Leo come in relation to these?
Out of history.
Way around the other side.
It's totally opposite from Aquarius, right?
It's on opposite
on
Aquarius?
The circle.
Oh, it is?
I know it's
July 1st. Cancer. I mean, if you're on the wheel, isn't it opposite?
I don't know.
Well, it'll be, make it a quick question from where you're going. Taurus, coming back. Gemini.
Anyway, it's outside of our historical knowledge.
I'm just wondering where it stands with respect to Aquarius. Is it 180 degrees across the zodiac?
I think so.
That would explain why it's Leo and Aquarius.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I was getting at when I said that astrologically.
Right.
I need to look this up, but I think astrologically Aquarius is the least exalted in Leo. I think that's how they say it. Something like that.
Yeah, okay. That means nothing to me. I don't understand astrology.
I'll take your word for it.
Well, I have to look it up. I'm not positive. What's being born is looked at from the older as abhorrent or is not valued yet. So what's being born in the new is not yet.
So it would be his direct opposite or his deepest shadow, and you know, something that he could, by virtue of being Leo, give special attention to.
Yeah, y'all, I don't know if you can see this, but here's the text. Here is a picture of a lion on one side. Here's a picture of a guy dumping out a bucket of water. And that's Aquarius.
On
the other side right here. That looks like a flower. Would you agree?
That was a sun.
I did too. I thought it was the sun because it was gold.
It's golden.
Okay, that's the sun. And I think you feel that there are shapes in here?
They're flowers.
No, it's right above. You can't see on here, but right in here in the side of these columns, there's a sun, and then there's a D here.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't figure out what those were over there. I even used a magnifying glass to try to really look at them, and I couldn't.
But you think these are meaningful, or are they just decorative?
We're not talking about the pillars.
Yeah.
We're talking about
I know.
Little shapes up there.
Okay, but I'm asking whether the pillars have any meaning.
Well, you mean the next to the text? Beside the text?
Mm-hmm.
Those look like decorative shapes
to
me.
Okay. And below, you think they're decorative shapes as well?
It seems to be.
Yeah, so the meaning is up here then?
That's what it seemed like.
To me, it seemed like a temple of some kind because you have the pillars.
Oh, I see. So next to the guy dumping out the water is a structure with, it looks like, a portico or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And but there's nothing other than the lion here? Or
there's the sun and a letter D.
It appears to
right
be
a D. Right above the lion, or the sun. Mm-hmm. There's a D. So I couldn't figure those out.
I don't know if they were alchemical symbols or astrological symbols. I couldn't find anything quite like them.
They were on the left side.
Pardon me?
And they were on the left side.
Left and right.
The lion was on the left and the water bearer was on the left.
Mm-hmm.
Which would seem to be opposite, because you would think of the water bearer being the unconscious and on the left.
Well, if we think about Zarathustra for a second. You could say, I hope I don't confuse you, but thus spoke Zarathustra, for those of you who haven't gotten into it. Zarathustra is bringing a new world. Zarathustra is doing in the book what the spirit of the depths is asking Jung to do in his life, bring a new set of values. So in the beginning of Zarathustra, one of the texts discusses a process of change characterized in three phases of a lion, a camel, and a child. And the way Jung works with that is that to enact change, you have to have a lion's strength to devour the old system. You have to have a camel's endurance to stand the loss of certainty when that's destroyed. And you then come to a child, which would be the new orientation. And now it's possible that that lion could be the lion in Zarathustra, because your life is with he who has overcome himself, is straight out of Zarathustra. And we'll talk about that, what that means in a second. And so that we go from the lion to, which would be the brutalness it takes to change in the sense of giving up old comforts. Water carrier would be that we begin to work with our own unconscious, carry our own water, as opposed to living it through projection in the iconography of the church. The water would be the symbolic world. With the church, it's out there with the change that he's being asked to accomplish. We realize it's in here. That's a possible way to look at it.
What is the disowning your own self?
Well, let's go to your life as he who has overcome himself. Again, that's from Zarathustra, and in the text, the phrase that's always used is that this change is an overcoming of yourself. Now, for Jung, and this is where it gets complicated, that's a sick statement.
That's a what?
Sick statement. Oh. Overcoming yourself. That's Nietzsche's way of describing this change as getting bigger and better. And as Jung interprets it, the tragedy of Nietzsche is Nietzsche knows darn well the old God is dead. But what he comes up with is that we become just like the old God. We surpass. We get better. It's more power, more perfection, and it's exactly what the Nazis did. Now, Jung, you see, is still under the influence of that here. I think that's what... So we're getting Jung both under the influence of a wrong understanding and struggling to find a right understanding. What Jung says about the Zarathustra book is, your life is he who has overcome himself. That, in and of itself, taken literally, just produces an inflation. You try to get stronger, you try to get better, you try to get more perfect, you get rid of your animal nature, you become like a very strong machine. And what Jung says, the seed of that is that we do need a new person, but it's not an overcoming, it's a becoming yourself. So that Nietzsche is feeling an old world dead and is struggling to find to articulate the new world, but he blows it. Jung respects that he's trying to find a new world, but Jung says, but we've got to reformulate how we understand what that new world is. And what that new world is for Jung is becoming oneself. Becoming the self. Following the self. So that phrase, overcoming the self, is really loaded. From Nietzsche's point of view, it means becoming perfect. You know, we talked about this in the Zarathustra class. When the Nazis, you know, invaded Russia, they thought it would be a quick victory. It wasn't. They got caught in the winter, you can imagine, mm-hmm. with summer coats. They had no winter gear. Hitler said, be strong enough to overcome that. See, that's the overcoming. It's power and disregard of our real needs. It's a very one-sided understanding of strength. The drive to that, Jung accepts, but he says, well, what we've got to reformulate how we understand what the alternative is to the old God. It's not to become perfect, it's to become whole.
So to put it simply, you're saying that your life is with he who has overcome himself. So he's critiquing that in the rest of the sentence.
Well,
is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, it's a completely confused sentence from the point of view of later Jung. Let's say what Jung would have written 20 years later is, your life is with he who becomes himself.
And specifically, I'm wondering how you interpret and who has disowned his self-overcoming.
Right. He has to qualify it because it's already a false misunderstanding.
Okay.
It's a false understanding.
All right.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So, see, the temptation is you kill the hero, and you're right back being a hero again. So Jung works so hard to say, if you give up the heroic ideal, if you give up your old idea of God, how do you not fall back into the same psychology with different words? Look at existentialism. Man becomes God. It's the same theology, except in one case it's God, and the other case it's man. And Jung is trying to come up, I mean, after this work, how do we give up God, how do we give up the hero and not fall back into it? What really is the new thing? And the new thing is the self and the disidentification of the ego from the self and the serving of the self. Now he's going to be flipping in and out of these two points of view all along, because he's only 35 years old here. So he read Nietzsche as a young man, and here he's speaking like Nietzsche. Later coming back and saying, whoa, that is not adequate. Make sense? It's double complicated because some of what's written here is not trustworthy. And we've got to figure out what is and what isn't, just like he did. Because look at the next sentence. I also know, so it's like now he's reevaluating what he just wrote, that the salvation of mercy is given only to those who believe in the highest and faithfully betray themselves for 30 pieces of silver. So you go from overcoming yourself to being a criminal. That's a reference to Judas, right? 30 pieces of silver.
That's also relates to Nietzsche too, doesn't it? The pale criminal that he talks about. Could it relate to the pale criminal?
Yes, it could, yep. Which Nietzsche could never muster. Yeah. So in a way, you could say these two statements are two sides of the beginning realization of the self. On the one hand, it's an inflation. On the other hand, it's a betrayal. An inflation and a failure. But that's exactly how it starts. See, in Nietzsche, the overcoming never talks about getting your hands dirty. It's a flight from getting your hands dirty. Only the riffraff get their hands dirty. The new man would be like the knight in shining armor. And so the next sentence, those who will dirty their pure hands and cheat on their best knowledge against error and take their virtues from a murderer's grave are invited to your great banquet. So what we've got is, this is the way the unconscious manifests, a jumbly gook of conflicting, contradictory statements. Assaults one. He's writing it down. Now, in his life, he's going to go back and look at how all those statements are mutually contradictory. And out of the synthesis of them, we do get a complete whole. Does that make sense?
Because all this is the spirit of the depth talking. Right?
Yes, it's the spirit of the depth. And the way the unconscious speaks, it is not bothered by contradiction. So you get these truths, but they're mutually contradictory. And then what consciousness has to do is go back and critique and say, but if this is true, this can't be true. And say, what's the bigger picture that all of these statements are a piece of? And the bigger picture is the self, consciousness. Consciousness of the self is a type of overcoming.
So the unconscious is a collection of all these ideas,
yes,
that have been passed down.
Right.
And don't necessarily weren't integrated.
Probably were not integrated. Right. Yeah.
Could they be integrated and still follow that definition of moving toward the consciousness?
Yeah. What they're, I think we'll see it as we go along, what the unconscious is pushing for is to be synthesized. See, what a psychotic person does is they just identify with each of these pieces and their life is gobbledygook. And, you know, there are, you don't have to go very far to hear, it said how those various pieces are pathological. But for Jung's point of view, those pieces are future constituents of a larger whole. And they're coming not because there's something wrong, but because there's something right that's trying to be born, that needs all of them together. But each one fine-tuned.
When he says cheat on their best knowledge against errors, that brought up to me that saying, if you're going to break the law, you've got to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it presupposes you've got a best knowledge. See how crazy thoughts in one sentence here. Not crazy, but I mean pithy thoughts in one sentence that compared to the next sentence are contradictions.
But they are ideas that he unites eventually.
Eventually. So, you know, he's just letting all this stuff bubble up in him. He's writing it down, and he's going to go back and say, okay, and I think this is the beauty of his work here, all, let me say that a bit cynically, what cognitive behavioral therapy would do is show him the error in each of these. What Jungian psychology does is try to see the little bit of truth in each of these. And then look for the bigger piece that gives each of them, gives each of the little bit of truth in each of them a place. That makes sense?
So, like dreams, it looks like the unconscious here is taking what Jung already has known and experienced, like Nietzsche's work, and kind of incorporating it in here.
Say that again.
Because it's so confusing, because he's saying something that the unconscious is saying something that it realizes Jung will get because he's read Nietzsche. It is because this is the unconscious speaking, not Jung.
Right.
So he uses these words that Nietzsche used so that when Jung sorts it out, he'll say, okay, all right, that's what I understood then. This is what I understand now.
Down the road.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
You might be giving a little too much credit to the influence of Nietzsche here. I think it just bubbled up. And my guess is, Zar spoke Zarathustra. I can't believe people have stuck with it this long. But it is a whole book of thoughts like this. One contradictory statement after the other, each one having a bit of truth, each one having a bit of falsehood, each one in contradiction to what came before it and after it. It's just an outpouring of unconscious material. What Jung does is go through the book and try to see, okay, what's the bigger picture here that's trying to be born out of all these pieces? And I think he could do that because he'd work with his own psyche. His own psyche was working in the same way.
But again, like a dream. Don't trust everything.
Right. Right. And he's learning that here.
Right.
That's what I think. Yeah.
I was thinking that because Jung had read Nietzsche and was influenced by him and saw that there was this grain of truth, that the unconscious used that verbiage because it would be meaningful.
The unconscious might have used the verbiage. I don't think there's anything conscious about it at this point.
Right.
Well, that's what I was trying to make a distinction.
Yeah.
Or even that both these guys were just vomiting out the collective unconscious at the time. Hard to say who influenced whom.
So it's like this is all of the stuff really didn't have meaning as a total, but had all these little pieces of meaning.
Exactly.
And we're trying to figure out what that means.
What the bigger meaning is. So once you get the bigger meaning, you can understand, oh, that's a little bit of it. Oh, that's a little bit of it. Oh, that's a little bit of it. And, oh, that part of it isn't true. That part of it isn't true. That's the art of working with the unconscious. I think it's why it's worth going through here. You often get, certainly at the deeper levels, these highly ambivalent themes, which your rational mind says, oh, that's stupid, you know. But if you go back to it with a symbolic mind, you realize, well, that's a little piece of truth there, but that's not true. Well, that's a little piece of truth there, but that's not true. So what is the bigger piece that's trying to come to me through these smaller ambivalent statements?
Mm-hmm.
And once you get that bigger piece, then that crap stops. Yeah, that's what we're talking about, that conference in, you know, in North Carolina, that the dreams are the voice of God, and it doesn't, they don't realize what a mess it is down there.
And are they talking for, among the audience or the speakers?
The audience. Well, you say a prayer before each talk, and that this is, we're hearing God's voice. Well, you're also hearing the devil's voice.
But God is both. God is both.
Well, as long as they understand that, but for them it means here is a guidance.
Okay.
And it is a guidance if you work with it.
Conference is there?
Oh, there's a sort of pastoral counseling conference that I presented. They're lovely people, but it's this little bit of the unconscious as a completely trustworthy guide. And it is a trustworthy guide if you can work with its contradictions. But it takes the ego to pull that off. And an awareness of what, like we said here, your life is he who has overcome himself. That's the way to becoming Christ. That's the way to becoming crazy. How do you overcome what? To what? Well, to insanity.
Well, I think you should know that theologian Sadie is explaining to her mother how God has two sides.
Oh.
The first side of the dark side.
I love her.
She's 8 years old.
She's way ahead of us.
And she is, but she hasn't. That's only three.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I bet she'll become a theologian. Well, you're with me so far. We're just about out of time, but I know we spent a lot of time on these details, but I think it's important that we really learn how to work with this material, and so we can hear the contradictions, respect the brilliance, and also critique it, and then watch how a larger worldview is trying to come to birth through these confusing moments. How far did we get? I'm afraid to ask.
Did
we get through a page? Where did we start?
242.
We didn't even get through a page.
Yeah, we did.
We sort of did.
Two columns.
Let's call it an overcoming of ourselves. And the achievement of a page. I don't think we'll get much farther. I mean, this is going to be dense. I don't know if it's going to continue being this dense, but this whole section is dense. So, I'll go slow until you holler it's too slow, but it's so rich, I think we need to sink our teeth into it. So I'd say nothing new to read for next time. We'll just we'll probably even go this space next time.
Did we finish?
No.
We didn't
get through. We got
dangerous.
The constellation of your birth. Let's see, we got that far.
Yeah, I think his horoscope's online. I might.
I also have a copy of it. I could bring it. Yeah, I could bring it.
It might be interesting to see.
I'll make myself a note. Okay, I got a note here.
Did Alice Howell do his? Didn't she do?
I don't know.
I guess I've noticed the planetary statement after.
Which one's that?
The very end of that column.
You are a veritable God.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see? That's crazy.
Yeah.
See how it's trying to move him into craziness?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think it's exciting because this is exactly what you are confronted with if you're working at depth. You get the best, you get the worst, you get guidance, you get distractions, and if you can wrestle with it, that's where beautiful things start happening. Okay.
Did you say that possibly Nietzsche and all of the things that happened to him were a necessary precursor to how Jung...
Edinger said point blank, without Nietzsche, Jung would have been a fatality. because he learned where the mistakes were.
Yeah. He learned the negative side.
Well, he learned, you know, this is, sounds just like Nietzsche, and Nietzsche just went with it. If I go with it, I'll go crazy. So I better go back and look at what I've just done.
Well, and Nietzsche was not accepted, and that stung him.
Yeah.
I mean, too, like, you talked about that, well, mm-hmm. you saw what society, how society crucified
yeah. Jesus. And then what Jung did is, okay, here's all my experience. If I talk about this directly, people are going to block me up.
Yeah.
How can I talk about it in a way that is acceptable? And that's why he went to empiricism. Dream examples. Okay, we'll see you in two.